Hear that? Oh, yeah. Welcome to HGH, Hey Girl Hey, the podcast, with your hosts, Nathan and Brad. This week, we talk about the ultimate bitch fight, Siri versus Alexa. We talk about pollen and how it makes us want to gag. And then we take a serious turn into personal security.
All right. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Nathan. How are you this fine evening?
I am fantastic. Thanks for asking. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. Just finished up at the gym a little while ago.
Did you have a good workout?
I did. And then after the gym, I decided to treat myself to a straight razor head and face shave at the local barbershop.
That sounds exciting.
It was. It's quite a soothing, relaxing experience.
I imagine it is. Where the hell do you go for something like this? It's a local place?
So, yeah, there's a little local place here in the town I live in, right downtown, and it's just three guys in there, and it's really old school the way they have it set up. So you walk in, and you know you sign in on the little like chalkboard thing they have, and you know they're dressed in a shirt and tie with the old school like leather apron on. With all the tools and stuff, like their scissors and their combs and stuff, and the pockets on the front of it. You get a complimentary draft beer while you wait, so you can't complain about that.
You get a complimentary draft beer.
You get a complimentary draft beer while you wait, or if there's no one waiting, they'll let you drink it while they're working on you. However, I don't recommend trying to drink it when they're doing the straight razor shave on your neck. That's probably not a good idea.
I imagine.
Because if you go to swallow, that could be the end.
So this barbershop sounds awesome. It reminds me of back when I used to have hair that I would go to like Sports Clips and do the hot towel. And I got, and you know, they do this kind of gross platonic massage thing that was like, we will barely touch you enough to qualify for a massage your shoulders.
Right. Or in, you know, I remember going to them and they actually would buy the little like neck massager machine. So they didn't actually have to touch you. You know, she would reach
down. Right.
She would read, the stylist would reach down and in his or her cabinet and she would pull the little machine out and they'd run it over the back of your neck for like 30 seconds and call it good.
Yeah, that's right. It looked kind of like a gun or something with this little white thing that vibrated at the end of it. It was actually kind of uncomfortable.
Exactly. But no, there is no weird massage as part of the experience at this place. Although, even without hair, you still get the nice hot towel treatment. In fact, before they do the head shave, they will put some like soothing lotion on it and whatnot, just trying to get the follicles stimulated. Then they wrap it in a hot towel. So I looked like Barbara Eden from I Dream of Jeannie there for a short amount of time. With the towel wrapped around my head. I always just say, was that maybe some of our listeners, they won't quite get that cultural reference.
I was going to say the young ones won't understand that at all.
No, that's why you should go watch TV Land, if they even still have that on. I think TV Land now shows, you know, shows from when you and I were growing up. Like, I think Home Improvement is now considered an old show.
Yeah, I think. And also TV Land started dabbling in original content, right? That was the show with Betty White and Valerie.
Oh, right.
Bertinelli.
Yeah. Hot in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Oh,
yes. I don't know what the hell they were thinking.
Kind of like a modern day Golden Girls almost.
They tried. They really did try.
Except this time Betty White was the, you know, slut.
Much like she wanted to be for the original.
Exactly.
So we should probably start off with a quick clarification. Last week, news was coming in as we were recording. This was hot on the heels of the crash, Tesla crash of the Model X. It was not the Model X that was recalled, though. We had mentioned on the recording that Tesla had recalled some of their cars. That is specific to the Model S series, not the Model X. So just a quick clarification. We should probably not talk about breaking news as it's blowing up on my wrist.
Yes, because the last thing we would want to do is be perpetrators of spreading fake news.
Oh, please don't say that.
Okay, we'll strike that. That's not on the acceptable list.
Yep. But in other probably more recent news, which this is kind of under a main title, did you see that Apple had a very, shall we say, strategic hire today?
I did catch wind of that. So apparently all those people complaining about Siri and her lack of intelligence apparently has prompted them to take some action.
Yeah, this is hopeful. It is optimistic that this guy will report directly to Tim Cook. Apple doesn't change that layer of management very often, so for them to add a new direct line into Tim is interesting. I'm shocked that there wasn't some sort of anti, non-compete. I know California has some pretty liberal employment laws around non-competes and things like that. So for him to be doing AI and be a thought leader at Google for AI and then go to Apple and do the same thing seems interesting. But I'm sure they presented him with the opportunity to make a material impact given how far behind Apple is.
Well, I look forward to great things to come.
Oh my God, yeah. Today,
and by the way, if he just happens to listen to this, no pressure. No pressure at all.
We're just pinning all of our hopes for Apple's AI on you. No biggie.
No biggie. Yep. The future of the company may be resting in your hands, but no biggie.
Yeah, that shouldn't keep him up at night. So one of the things you had put on the show topics ideas, and I like this one, is Siri versus Alexa. And I think everyone, I know several podcasts I listen to have talked about the Siri versus Alexa versus Google Assistant. And I don't have any firsthand experience with Google Assistant, admittedly. I don't have a Google device in my home, but I sure as hell do have the original Amazon Echo black canister, the first ones. And I also have a HomePod, right? And I also have a myriad of Apple devices, all of which have, hey, you know who, enabled. We're not going to say the name, lest devices everywhere start waking up for no good reason. Just one of those classic examples. I was in the gym. I was trying to start a podcast, or a playlist. I have a playlist of various up-tempo drag music or music by drag queens, and it's called the Drag Queens Playlist. And so I said, hey,
why am I not surprised at this?
Because you know me. And so I'm calling out because I've got my AirPods in, I'm on the elliptical, and I'm like, hey, can play my what did I say? I think I said something specific like, hey, you know who, play the Drag Queens Playlist. And it took four tries for her to get to that. And I think I finally had to move the playlist called Drag Queens up. And then she finally understood. Otherwise, she was telling me the history of drag. She was telling me who the tallest person on Drag Race was. She was telling me about the history of drag racing. I mean, she was all over the place.
So you probably learned some interesting facts, but, of course, you didn't get her to do exactly what you wanted.
Not on the first try, or the second, or the third. It took the fourth. And it's painfully obvious, too. I will tell you, having this much Siri around me, because it is now on my MacBook, my Apple Watch, my iPad, my iPhone, and now my HomePod, just how different the experience is. I think that's really frustrating. I'm hopeful that at WWDC, given all the attention since the HomePod's release, that they're going to straighten Siri out. But it's difficult to be able to call out, hey, you know who. And then first of all, you'll see all the devices light up and there's an election apparently, and then eventually someone wins. Sometimes it's the HomePod, sometimes it's my watch, sometimes it's all of them, and they don't apparently realize that they're all answering it. That happens pretty routinely. The other thing that'll happen is sometimes I'll use the HomePod as an alarm clock. So I'm like, hey, you know who, wake me up at 8 o'clock in the morning. And then 8 o'clock rolls around and I'm in my bedroom and my HomePod's in my living room. And I'm yelling, hey, you know who, stop. And my HomePod keeps or keeps ringing because it's so loud, but my iPhone's hearing me. So then I have to march my ass out of bed and walk in the living room. So then I'm up. So I guess it kind of achieves its goal.
It's probably doing that on purpose, right? I mean, you did want it to get you out of bed, and it is achieving that goal. So stepping back, who determines who wins this election? I mean, is there Russian meddling involved, or
No. They just do that to elections and Olympics.
Oh, okay.
There's a support website. There's a K-Base article on Apple's website that talks about how this, and it's supposed to prioritize who was the loud or who heard the clearest and who was the last one to service the request and some other things. But I can tell you it's very, very frustrating. The other thing I will tell you that's such, I mean, this is pure Apple, right? They should nail this, but I have an Apple TV. It is my primary television device. I don't have anything else in my house that I watch TV on. And when I had my Xbox One, one of the nicest features was to be able to say, Xbox play, Xbox pause, Xbox, you know, skip back, skip forward. This is especially handy when someone calls, right? I'm a big believer. I hate to call someone and hear their TV in the background. And I don't do it to my callers. So I'm searching around for that teeny tiny Siri remote that slides under everything if you breathe on it. And it would be so nice to say, hey, you know who, pause the Apple TV. But of course, she can't do that yet.
I'll take that one step further. Wouldn't it be nice if you are in the Apple ecosystem like you and I are, if you were getting a phone call to have it pop up on your Apple TV to say, hey, you're getting a phone call, and maybe it could lower the volume automatically. And if you answer the phone, it will just pause itself.
Yeah, you know, that one should be easy. They're halfway there because when my phone rings, and I'm sure you probably have it turned on too, my watch lights up, my iPad lights up, my MacBook lights up.
Oh, yeah, everything lights up.
And I remember that was one of the first features that TiVo and DirecTV offered if you plugged in your telephone.
Correct.
Would be that they would put caller ID information on your screen, and it's just kind of handy to look up, right? I mean, it is on my wrist. This is totally a first world problem, but it would be handy if you're watching, you look up, and it just paused the content if you hit accept, right?
Sure.
And if you've got a HomePod, maybe it, I mean, they could really do some neat inventive things. When you have all of these pieces, they can do cool stuff.
Yep. So again, here we are. We're kind of making like an Apple wish list, I feel. So perhaps we should send the link of this recording over to, tim.cook@apple.com, make sure that he gets our list of demands.
Exactly. Although I would hope, having been close to product development myself, I would hope that the things that they're going to announce in June, they have off of the drawing board, right? They should be well past that. If they're still planning features for what's going to happen at DubDub, they are way behind schedule.
Yeah, but, yeah, you're right. Even though I think you and I have had experiences at other companies where that would totally be the norm.
We're not going to name names. What's your – so let me ask you, right? I try to use Siri. I think Siri is the best and only way to use my watch. I think the UI, while better, right? Since watchOS, what was it, 2 or 3, it got a lot better. But I still find it's faster when it works to use Siri on the watch. I think it's one of the killer features is to be able to ask for what I want and have it do it. So what's your experience? Are you a Siri believer? Do you a Siri struggler? Or I forget she's even there. That seems to be the three categories.
You know, I find myself often in that third camp that I forget she's even there. At home, while I do enjoy my Apple products, my home automation stuff is more compatible with Alexa. So, you know, I have a Z-Wave system. So my door locks, I have light bulbs, a couple other things integrated with it. And I can just shout to my Amazon lady in the can. And I have, three dots, an Echo, and then I have my Sonos One system in our master bedroom, which both of those have Alexa integration. Built in, which it's kind of interesting the way that works, right? So I have them set up as a stereo pair. So obviously when you're playing back, you know, music content, you're going to have a left channel and a right channel. But when you call for the lady in the can, it's a crapshoot which one actually answers. Is it going to be the left speaker or the right speaker that answers?
I was going to ask you, because like I said, I've read the K-Base article. I know Apple has thought of the multiple devices within earshot, right? I don't know that I've ever seen anything from Amazon to the same point.
Well, I would argue that if it exists at all, which I seriously doubt it does, it's pretty rudimentary because from our master bedroom, of course, again, we have the two Sonos One speakers in there. And then in each of the bedrooms down the hall, there's an Echo Dot because I have the bedside lamps in each of those rooms remote controlled because there's no switch on the wall for them. It's just easier. We can say, you know, hey, lady in the can, turn the lights on in this room, and they just come on. But from our master bedroom, I've gotten both, you know, either one of the Sonos One speakers will answer. Every now and again, one of the dots from down the hall will end up answering me. even though I'm not shouting or talking very loud, all of a sudden it's just like you hear this voice coming from the other room going, okay.
I wasn't talking to you.
Exactly. It's like, I was not talking to you, woman. But what's frustrating about the Sonos One implementation is, you know, and I do the same thing you do, right? Before I go to bed, I say, you know, hey, lady in the can, set an alarm for 6:45 a.m. And if the left speaker answers, when you go into the Alexa app, they show up as two separate devices. So that alarm then is on that speaker. If you pull up the other speaker, the alarm's not there. So it just, they really should develop a way, I think, that, you know, in the Alexa app side of things, it treats the stereo pair as one device, right? And then it can figure out which one wants to answer kind of behind the scenes, but treating it as two separate devices. Maybe the answer is, I wonder if I can turn the lady in the can feature off on just one of them, right? And just have one act as that, maintaining the stereo pair, but the other one has that feature disabled. I might need to look into that.
One becomes the assigned delegate.
Yes. You know, one becomes the smart speaker. The other one, for all intent purposes, becomes the dumb speaker.
Well, if one of them's not smart enough to behave well, then sometimes you have to beat it in the head like a kid, and then you get a dumb kid. So there you go.
Is that what happened to you?
Nathan's life story.
Womp womp.
Well, again, I am optimistic. I'm hoping we'll see some changes. I thought we would see more at last year's developers conference, but certainly Apple's had a year to figure this out, and they made a big hire. I don't know that he'll make an impact by June, but who the hell knows, right? They could go ahead and announce some stuff and then do it later, but we'll have to see.
Apple announce things and then deliver on it later? That's never happened.
Speaking of HomePod.
Right. It's coming out. Say, speaking of HomePod, where is my AirPower mat? I'm waiting for that.
Yeah, that was one of the things I don't know how people thought would be like a press release announce, you know, because a lot of things dropped that were not part of the education event, but they did go on sale. Apple always seasonally updates their watch bands, and they came out, and there were some new cases for the HomePod, for the iPhone and iPad, but they never have announced the AirPower mat, so I don't know where it got.
Yeah, I'm anxiously waiting, as is my nightstand that has a tangle of my watch charger and like four or five lightning cables and all of this stuff that once the mat is released, it will all go away and my nightstand will just look like this ultra modern, beautiful Qi charging station.
You know, mine's not too bad. I have an Apple Watch dock. I admit I was a sucker and I bought Apple's charging dock, so I have that. And I have a Qi charging dock, a stand-up dock, which is actually pretty nice to be able to see the front of my phone or do like a FaceTime call, especially when my partner was in China. So my nighttime was his daytime, so a lot of times we ended up, you know, FaceTiming before bed. And then I just have the one lightning cable running around for my iPad, which I charge on my nightstand as well. So
what about your AirPods?
The AirPods, they don't require daily charging. I mean, I find that I can charge them every probably every couple of days, and they're fine. And I'm a pretty heavy user. I have to tell you, I don't know if we've talked about this, but I love my AirPods. They are singly one of my favorite Apple devices I've ever owned. They really made podcasting and listening to audio at any time super convenient. That was like keeping the corded headphones around, I found thoroughly inconvenient. Trying to pair and turn on my Bluetooth headphones just to work out was a pain in the ass, let alone like on daily or like sitting at my desk at the office. But being able to flip open that case and toss them in, I am in love. So they are singly one of my favorite products. But anyway, I don't charge them on my nightstand. Sometimes if the battery's low, I'll just throw them on the charger on my iPad cable and leave them before I go to bed. And they're topped off by the time I go to bed.
See, I'm one of those people. I just have this, like, I and it may not even be good for them, but I plug them in every night, which is probably why I don't think I've ever seen the battery level on the AirPod case drop below like 80%. it's part of my routine.
No, yeah. And I, like I said, I have gotten to that point. I've probably tried to push it 3 days, or I've been listening to my AirPods like all day long at work and all through the gym and all on my dog walk. And I'll be throwing them back in the case, and I'll have pulled a lot of battery out of that case. But that case holds a surprising amount. And those AirPods run on, I think they're microscopic batteries.
Yeah. So I want to go back to the question that you had posed to me about, you know, my awareness of Siri, right? So, because one of the other features, one of the other areas that where she does come in handy for me, and I do remember that she's there, is how she integrates with CarPlay. So my car came from the factory with Apple CarPlay support. You know, usually whenever I'm driving, I have my phone plugged into the USB port, which unfortunately now there are some models out there that do a wireless CarPlay. Mine is not one of them, so I still have to have the lightning cable tethered to the phone. Once I do that and CarPlay is up and running, I actually have a button on my steering wheel that I can just press, and it instantly calls up Siri, and I can just tell her to do whatever. And it, you know, will interact with the CarPlay screen, or, you know, if I want to, let's say, make a phone call, instead of touching that button on the steering wheel, I can simply just hit the phone icon from the home screen on CarPlay. And she will just go ahead and ask me who I want to call, or if I do text, who I want to text. And I can just, you know, start barking orders at her, and she generally does a pretty good job.
Well, that's good. The last time I visited my mom, or actually a couple of visits back, my mom has a brand new Kia, and it has CarPlay corded. And I enabled D&D while driving, which I'm a big believer in. I've had two accidents that were phone distraction related, so big believer in D&D while driving. I wish everyone would turn it on. But I turned hers on without telling her.
Aha.
So when my mom starts asking Siri to do, I don't know what the hell she was asking for. All I know is I got an angry phone call that this dumb woman won't do anything, and all she says is, "I'm sorry, Patricia, I can't do that while you're driving." So she was not happy with me.
So what's interesting, so I have D&D on as well, and I have it set to when it detects that it is Bluetoothed to my car, it will automatically go into D&D mode. However, if I plug my phone in via USB in my car, it will actually disconnect the Bluetooth and it overrides the D&D setting. So it actually turns it right back off. And if I'm using CarPlay and you send me a text message, it actually comes through like it normally would.
Well, then that kind of defeats the purpose.
Well, it kind of does, I guess, right? I guess they figure if you're using CarPlay, then you didn't want D&D. So, but if you do want both, I actually in my car haven't figured out how you actually do that, how you would actually get it to stay in do not disturb mode while driving when it's connected to CarPlay. Because as far as I know, it won't.
You would use D&D while driving set automatically, and then it uses the accelerometers to detect it's in a car.
And then even though it's plugged in via USB and it's running CarPlay, it shouldn't override that setup.
Correct, because it's it's no longer in triggered by Bluetooth, but it's in fact triggered because it thinks you're moving at 50 miles per hour, which...
Because it's moving. Gotcha.
No matter how fast you run would be 50 miles per hour.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'll have to give that a try.
Give it a shot. Let me know.
Yeah.
Because my car is so ancient, it doesn't identify the car Bluetooth as the, quote, car Bluetooth. So I don't know if that was a profile that they added later, but my car is like... Anyway, don't get me started. I hate Toyota's infotainment center, and this is not going to be the Toyota bitch podcast.
That's another podcast.
That is another podcast. So let's change topics. Let's talk about something very near and dear to my heart. It's a seasonal topic. You put it on the list. I think it's a good ad. But by way of a little bit of background information, Brad and I both live in the southern United States. Most of our friends know where we live if they're listening to the podcast. If you are somewhere else, we're in the south. It's the spring, and every surface right now is covered in a thick yellow pollen.
Ah, yes. My favorite time of year. Not.
Oh, my God. It's a time of year I affectionately refer to as the yellow death, just because it's everywhere. It's on everything. I was noticing on, there's a body of water near our office, and there's a foot line of it where it's, you know, drifted into the pond and kind of migrated to the coastlines. It's just gross. It's on everything. And we all pray for rain to wash all of this away, and it just cannot come soon enough.
And it's funny. I remembered seeing there was supposed to be a chance of rain today and into tonight, but I haven't seen anything yet. So it would be nice just to get a quick downpour, just to at least clean everything off.
To scrub.
Right?
Yeah.
Albeit temporarily, because according to the one local meteorologist, they expect this to last, this peak, to be about 3 weeks, and we're in week one still. So it will wash.
Lord merciful heaven.
It'll wash away what's there, but in a few days, it's going to be right back.
You know, I grew up further north, and I'm told we have a pollen season, but I don't remember anything. And maybe it was because I was a kid, but I don't remember everything getting caked in this sticky yellow dust.
I don't think it did, because, you know, as you know, I grew up a little bit even further north than you.
Yeah.
And you know, I actually was talking to my mom the other night, and they live further south than me, and they dealt with this like a month ago. And I was, you know, talking to her about it, and I said, you know, when we used to live up north, do you ever remember this happening? And she goes, no. So I think you're right. I think either the amount of trees where we are, or the type of trees, or something, it helps contribute to this, the sheer amount of pollen that we get.
I will add, for anyone who may be unfamiliar with it, I'm told that this yellow dust is pine pollen. And Brad and I are in North Carolina. Don't be creepy. But we have a lot of longleaf pines, and it is just gross, and it's on everything. And I hate this time of year. I have to imagine that the ground gets an inch thicker just because of this pollen dust that's just everywhere. It's so nasty.
It is. So I have to wonder then if other parts of the country where pine trees are prevalent, like the Pacific Northwest comes to mind, if they have a time of year when they deal with the same thing.
Yes. If you are perchance a listener from some other part of the country that's not the South, and you experience this yellow death, write in, hit us on Twitter at HeyGirlHeyFM. Let us know, because I'm just curious, because, again, in my limited life, this is the first I've seen it, but it's been consistent since I moved here, and it is repugnant. If nothing else, let me know where else this occurs so I can strike things off future places to live. You know what I'm saying?
I totally agree. You know, I will say this is one thing that it does pay to be a bald man, because – One of the pieces of advice that I heard on the news the other day is during the peak here, they're advising everyone, before you go to bed, make sure you wash your hair because it's full of pollen. And the minute you lay down, it's going to get all over your pillow, all over your sheets and everything. And you're basically going to be sleeping in it. well, you and I, except for our bit of facial hair, don't have hair on the head to worry about. So I feel like we're somewhat immune to that problem, although there is probably a light dusting of yellowness probably sitting atop my head right now, and I just don't even realize it.
You're not as shiny as you usually are.
Right? Yeah. It looks a little like a matte finish today.
You look like someone's been fingerprinting your head for a murder scene.
Actually, that's just because he nicked me with the straight razor earlier. That's why it looks like a murder scene.
Oh, gotcha. Oh, my God. Do you remember there was a couple of years back, we were in drought season here in the South. Like, the state was bone dry. We were overdue for any moisture whatsoever.
Was this back in the like 2007, 2008 time frames, about 10 years ago?
I don't think it was back.
Were you thinking of one more recently?
I'm thinking something more recently. I just remember that there was like no rain in March and April, or very little. And like the dust clouds of this pollen got so bad that you could go out on a windy day and it looked like the South with like these dust devils that would kick up. And it was just, it's probably the worst I've ever seen the pollen, because we were so desperate for rain just to clean out the air and the surfaces. And it never came until late in the month.
Yeah, because I remember it was spring of 2008 when I first moved here. And there was a drought going on, and it had gotten to the point where, and I don't know if you remember this, you know, hotels were told to turn the ice machines off. Restaurants couldn't just automatically bring you water. You had to start asking for it. And then even car washes were, you know, some of them closed or could only operate during certain days of the week.
Yeah, no, a local chain, a really popular local chain, actually built a program to recycle water and got certifications, and they're still there to this day. But that's the same era, that's the same season you're thinking of, when the local water supply lakes got exceedingly low, lowest I think they'd been in at least a couple of decades, and everyone was really panicking, and there was restrictions on watering, and yeah, it was tough.
Yep. So we got a little taste of what the folks in California deal with on a more frequent basis.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, if you're coming to the South, bring a dust mask, take some Claritin. But it's nice and warm. It was beautiful outside. I walked the dog in shorts. So there's that.
Yeah, just, you know, try not to breathe. It's funny. You joke about the dust mask, but I did pass a guy today on my way to work this morning, jogging, no joke, with a gas mask on.
A full-on like rubber hose gas mask?
It just had the canister on the end, but yeah, he looked like he was you know, planning for World War III.
That is kind of weird.
It was definitely a little different looking. All I can think of is, man, he must have really bad allergies.
I'm thinking, based on my own trips to California, that's, I usually associate weird things I would see out and about in California. So,
right? I'm like, this is not San Francisco. You can lose the gas mask. Because you see all sorts of weird stuff in San Francisco. I mean, I was there once. And not to get off topic, I suppose, but we, you know, just a minute talking about the, you know, one of the gay meccas of America and probably the world. I've seen, you know, guys dressed up like Merlin the Wizard on rollerblades going down the street. And what's funny is the natives, nobody bats an eye. They're like, you know, it's San Francisco. That's normal.
So I... Okay, so it's not on the topic list, but when has that ever stopped us, right?
Right.
So I love San Francisco. I've had the good fortune of being out there a handful of times. I've always enjoyed the weather, if not a little cool, but it's nice. It's pleasant. Here are my theories about San Francisco. First of all, the only two predominant smells I've ever noticed are urine and weed.
True and true.
If you walk around downtown San Francisco, yeah, I mean, there's only two smells. You either smell really strong weed or really strong urine. And sometimes if you're extra lucky, you get both.
So I'm waiting for the part where why you love it, because I'm guessing that's not the reason.
So here's my thing about San Francisco. The thing I finally discovered, I was there for, I think, a VMworld, and I was staying in Fisherman's Wharf. And at the time, I smoked. And so I stepped outside the hotel. And of course, in San Francisco, you can't smoke just like outside the door. You have to like go half down the block practically. And so I'd been outside.
Unless of course, it's weed, then they pretty much.
Oh, absolutely. It was early and I'd gone out for a smoke before I was finishing getting ready. And I'm watching this, the sun starting to brighten the sky, and I'm on Fisherman's Wharf. So I'm looking out over at Alcatraz. And so I'm outside and I look to my right and a guy on rollerblades wearing shorts, jean shorts that are too short for anybody, juggling. So
maybe it was the same guy that was on rollerblades dressed as Merlin the Wizard. It may have been.
Yeah, so I don't know if I painted that word picture correctly. He's wearing nothing but rollerblades and jean shorts that are literally like cut like high cut briefs, and he's juggling pins. That's it.
Oh wait, so that's all he was wearing? No shirt,
nothing.
No...
nothing.
Oh, okay then.
I think he might have had headphones on. So, and here's
that definitely makes a difference.
And here's what I discovered. So that in and of itself was funny. And I'm like, you know, it's one of those things you do kind of a double and then a triple take. But as you walk around San Francisco, certainly around the Castro, but elsewhere in the city, what you come to realize is that weird is normal there, right? If you're normal, you're weird there.
Right.
And that's what I think is so fun about that city is it's a very eclectic, open city that embraces a lot of weird things. I mean, it's also home to Dory Alley and Folsom Street Fair and a lot of things that everywhere else in the country would be behind closed doors or in dark alleys. But this is a city that embraces a lot of counterculture, has been home to a lot of counterculture. And so that's what I find charming is it's just this, if you can appreciate the weird and uniqueness, sometimes it's infuriating, sometimes it's a little too far out there for my taste, but I love a place like that where weird has a home.
So speaking of some of those events that happened there, I always enjoyed a story. One of my former coworkers, my former employer, she and I are actually still friends. We do chat from time to time. When she moved out to the Bay Area 20 years ago, her parents came out to visit, and she was from a rather small conservative town, I think in Kansas or Nebraska, you know, one of those flyover states in the middle. And,
oh God.
So her parents come to San Francisco and, they want to see, you know, all the sights of the city and whatnot. Well, they came during Folsom weekend and boy, did they get an eyeful.
Did they actually get onto the fair?
Apparently they at least, you know, got close to it or came across enough of the attendees to see more than they bargained for, as she put it.
So I have had the four. Have you been to Folsom Street Fair? Let me just ask that question.
I have not. And without trying to reveal too much about myself, it's on my list.
I have been to Folsom Street Fair. It wasn't on purpose. I was visiting a friend of mine who lived in San Francisco, and it just happened to be October, and it just happened to be the weekend of the fair. And so we went down, and I don't know what else to say other than I got
it's kind of like it's a fair, right? So there's like food and animals and stuff like that, right?
If you put animal in air quote, you're right. I think I set the appropriate expectation. When I looked up as we approached one of the entrances and I saw a go-go boy suspended over the street in a bird cage, and I thought, okay, I got it. And we'll stop there. We wouldn't want to scare the straight listeners, but it's an interesting experience. I will tell you that the locals will tell you that Folsom Street Fair has become tamer because it's approaching mainstream and they have a lot of folks who are not necessarily into the things that used to go on at Folsom Street Fair. So it's become tamer over the years, but it's still a sight to see. And I'll just leave it at that.
I just have one question. When you saw the go-go boy in the birdcage, did you look at him and ask him, Polly, want a cracker?
Sweetheart, he was so high in the sky, he couldn't have heard anyone. And the music was very, very loud. I mean, he was not just like overhead. I mean, like at the end of a cherry picker, like two, three stories in the air.
Was way up.
Yes. There. Yes.
Oh, okay. Here, I'm thinking he's hanging like, you know, 6 feet up and maybe.
No, I mean, literally dangling over the crowd, like a Christmas tree ornament over top of the presents. I mean, he is this up there.
Well, then.
Yeah. So anyway, the moral of the story, I love San Francisco, but I love any place like that where weird is normal. It's as a gay man who sometimes hasn't always fit in the places we find ourselves in geographically. It's comforting to be in a place where nobody, and I mean literally nobody, bats an eye. So that's cool too. I should also mention that it's the only place I've ever been that I walked into the bar and everyone, and I mean everyone in that bar, was singing along to Disney show tunes. So I knew I was home.
So surprisingly, I've walked into that similar situation on more than one occasion, and they've not all been in San Francisco. I actually walked into that once in Chicago. And I've also walked into that once in San Diego. So apparently, I've also walked into that at home with my husband singing along to Disney show tunes. In fact, he has an entire Pandora playlist called Disney Radio.
My gosh. Well, that makes sense, though. I know your husband, and that makes perfect sense.
Right. So a little bit about us, right? I do love Disney, right? But my husband is a bona fide Disney nerd. And whenever we go to Disney World, he's actually never been to Disneyland. I do want to take him one of these days. But whenever we've gone to Disney World, all of a sudden he turns into a five-year-old kid again. And I'm like, I'm going to go to the World Showcase at Epcot and sample beer from every country. Just come get me when you're done.
I love that he's so into
it. I have my fun too, but we actually have, and Nathan, I think you've seen it, our one guest bedroom is themed in all Disney stuff. So, you know, we have Mickey.
Tastefully themed, I might add. Yes,
it's not over the top. But everything in there is something related to Disney. So, of course, there's a lot of Mickey and Minnie stuff. There's a stuffed Pluto laying on the bed. So just all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, Disney's pretty cool. Do they still do gay days? Is that a thing still?
I believe that is still a thing. And add that to my list of things along with Folsom that I've not been to.
You got me there. I've not either, so. But I'm going to lord that I've been to FSF before you, over your head for some time to come. That's going to be fantastic.
So I have some catching up to do.
Yeah, you do. Better get with it. So let's talk about something else on the list here. You put MFP data breach. So I assume you're talking to the fact that Under Armour disclosed, I believe this was last week, late last week, early this week, in the last week or so, I believe, that the MyFitnessPal database had been breached, that people were able to download names, email addresses, I believe hashed passwords, and some other demographic data like age and things of that nature. So not a fantastic breach. This is not catastrophic, but it's still difficult. Things we can't change about ourselves, biometric things, our age, generally speaking, our gender, anything like that that's identifying is troubling because you're not going to go change your birthday. Do you use MyFitnessPal? I don't use it anymore.
So I there was a very short period where I downloaded it and I tried it for maybe 2 or 3 days. So I set up a profile on it and everything, but for nutrition, meal logging and whatnot, I use an app called Lose It. And then for my workouts and stuff, I use an app called Fitness Buddy, and that's where I track everything. So I don't even think I have MFP installed anymore on any of my devices. But, you know, like you said, the data breach, it's not catastrophic, but obviously somewhere somebody in the world now knows that I am 31 and was born in May and sometimes have high blood pressure and I'm overweight. So there you go.
And whatever would they do with that? I could probably go ahead and just pretend to be.
Exactly.
You'd totally be identity thefted. I'm going to pretend to be Brad.
Right. I think maybe they're going to use it for target advertising and just send me a bunch of like Reese Cup ads now.
Who do you think they are? Facebook?
Oh.
Bazinga. No, it's this world. It's this. We've talked about this. The amount of data that's being collected and whose hands it falls in. Not to bring it back to Apple, because this is not an Apple podcast, although both of us are admitted Apple fans. But I'm very, very grateful that Tim Cook and the rest of Apple stood toe-to-toe with the FBI when they were wanting them to build an encryption backdoor. Because it does not matter how hard you try, how hard you lock it down, and you would try to protect it, it will get out. If it can get out, it will get out. Just assume it will.
It will.
And for as much information as lives on my particular phone, and I happen to be a big, avid, I live my life on my phone, I find peace knowing that my phone has a good encryption at the data level on it. So that's just me.
This kind of gets into a bigger discussion, and I was going to ask you. So what are some of the steps that you take? I'm kind of curious to compare how I do things to kind of help keep yourself protected from these sort of things. I mean, obviously, like you said, if it can get out, you know, chances are high it's going to. You should always assume that. But, you know, there are certain things that you and I as the public at large, I suppose, can do to kind of help counteract that. So what are some of the things you do?
So my security practices, I consider hardened compared to everyone else, probably not hardened enough for like a tinfoil hat kind of guy, but I'm comfortable, right? So I do things like I religiously use two-factor authentication on any site that offers it. So I'm a big believer in that second, that second element needed to log into an account. For people who don't know, two-factor authentication that relies on SMS has a vulnerability because there's no security on SMS, right? It's fairly easy to call into your phone company and have them change IMEI numbers and take over someone's SMS. But it's better than nothing, right? And if you're going to have a really convicted, dedicated thief who's trying to crack your account for whatever reason, there's no foolproof method, but at least it's something, right? It's an extra layer of protection. Another thing that I do that I'm a big advocate for, and that's use a password manager. So I started using 1Password. I used to use LastPass. That was years ago. I switched over to 1Password. And I've been replacing all of my passwords with these complicated, long password gobbledygook, stuff that I could never remember, stuff that would be hard to brute force crack. I am guilty or was guilty for a long time of using like 5 passwords that I rotated on various sites with different permutations of capitalizations or punctuation, but you know, effectively 5. And when you compromise one of these passwords, like this story, right? Like having your password hacked a la Panera, that was the most recent data breach. You're asking for trouble if you use that same password on all of your websites. So one of the best things that you can do is use really strong passwords. And really strong passwords are hard to remember. So you have to use something like a password manager. And what I advocate for people is you have to find something that matches how you live, right? So I use 1Password because it has a client for my Mac. It has a client for my work PC, which is a Windows PC. It's on my iPhone. It's on my iPad. It even has my 2-factor authentication codes, a handful of them, on my watch app. So, you know, you want to make sure it follows you everywhere, because if you're using compromised passwords because you don't have your password manager installed and everything, that's not helpful. So those are some of the steps I take.
That's some pretty good advice. I like it. I will admit, so like you, I turn on 2-factor authentication when and where I can. But I'm not as good with the password manager thing. I think that's a lesson I could probably take from you and try to implement, because I still do I have 5 or 6 maybe with different permutations. And of course, I can never remember because every website seems to have different rules. Like this one, you can use punctuation. This one, you can't. This one requires 2 uppercase letters instead of 1. So, you know, and then I end up anyway storing all of my passwords in. Usually I let Safari just store it, right? And because even though it, I remember the password, I don't remember which permutation it is for that particular website. So, so I may have to work on hardening my security a bit.
Yeah, and I will say too, I think it was iOS 11 and macOS 10. Well, let's just say macOS El Capitan, right? No, Hi Siri, that gave us the new Safari password keyboard, which is really nice, right? So if you do use Safari and the iCloud syncing behind the scenes in the iCloud keychain between your phone and your Safari on your Mac, that's really nice because, you know, usually any app that needs a password login, they don't always support one password, but this this new password keyboard pops up about every app. And as long as the app and the website have the same email or URL, you can usually immediately find it. Sometimes you have to look for it if they use a different URL scheme. So that's a pain in the ass, but it's livable. So that's better than nothing. You're not wrong, right? Using a strong password generator, a lot of times it uses symbols, and a lot of websites you can use one symbol or maybe five. Sometimes you can use anything in your imagination. So it's, I'm not going to say it's easy, but it's, I feel better knowing that I use strong, difficult passwords, at least to the maximum that a website supports, and that I don't have to remember that garbage. And that's really the trick, I think. And again, the limitation with using Safari is it doesn't help you at work. I know you happen to work with a Windows PC, so.
Yes, I do. But what I end up doing is any website that I visit, personal website, like maybe my online banking or anything that requires a password, I will just do it on my phone or my iPad at work and just not do it for my work computer. So that doesn't actually end up being a problem all too often.
I'm guessing you probably never even log out of Tumblr anyway.
Now, wait a minute. That's not completely called for.
So I mean, it's I take my personal security seriously. I think I have more I have more apprehension around my family because they are not as adept. They don't use a password manager. They don't use strong, complicated passwords. They don't two-factor authentication makes their head hurt. So they're the ones I worry about. And not because they have information that can be compromised, because they're sitting on some vast fortune. They aren't. But more, I'm typically more concerned about device takeovers, information theft, things like that, right? That's the thing that tends to keep me up at night is not myself. I feel pretty good about myself. It's my family members and those around me. When I was on Facebook, every so often, I actually used to post a security tip. So if I'd see a new website that supported two-factor, if I saw a deal on 1Password or something like that, I used to post them. But as I'm no longer on Facebook, I'm no longer there. But I did used to do that to try to help the people around
me. Along the same lines, I have another question. I'm curious how you approach this. Do you have an antivirus or anti-malware software on your Mac?
I do not. I do not run an AV on my Mac. I do occasionally run Malware's Antibytes. They have a Mac version. It's not a. I don't use the Stay Resident portion of that. I just use the Sweeper. I consistently have never had a problem. So. I run without it. I don't want the overhead or the impact, especially on this little dual-core MacBook Pro.
Yeah, so I, for the longest time, didn't run one either. Therefore, my parents, with their Mac that they have, I didn't think it was necessary to put one on theirs either because I figured, okay, what's the worst they're doing? You know, logging into online banking, doing some email, Facebook, etc. Until I went down to visit them maybe 6 or 7 months ago now. And my dad was saying, hey, you know, I've got this kind of really weird behavior going on with Safari.
Oh, no.
And lo and behold, this thing had 13 viruses on it.
What?
And I'm like, I didn't know 13 viruses existed for a Mac.
Were they actual Mac viruses or were they like Safari or Chrome? Compromise.
I think a handful of them were Safari, like, you know, related, but one or two of them were actual Mac viruses. And I'm looking at my dad. I'm like, what the hell are you doing on this thing? You know what? And then I immediately stopped myself and I'm like, you know what? I don't want to know. What you do with it is your business. But they like it or not, they now have to deal with the performance hit because there is antivirus software on that thing now, because I don't want to have to deal with that again.
So that brings me to my final security tip of the day. And this is not meant to be an educational podcast, but we serve and we
– Take your computer away from your parents?
No. But not a bad idea.
Oh.
But we serve because we can, right? The other security tip I always have for people, and I'm always surprised at the resistance, and that's install your damn updates. I know people get cranky when UI elements change on their phone or their tablet or their PC, but with those updates are always security updates, right? They close holes, they patch up things. Install your damn updates. I know that the UI changes are annoying and sometimes frustrating. You will survive.
The thing that I've found frustrating with updates that thankfully we've kind of moved past for the most part is, you know, every week having a Flash or a Java update, you know, where you're now running Java version 87 release number 12, that, you know, and then next week there's release number 13, and every week there's something else that they have to patch or fix. Or, you know, of course, with Flash Player, you know, every 5 days I think there was another update released. So that I don't miss, because that to me genuinely was freaking annoying.
So there's a really good example, because both Java and Flash as an attack vector were dumpster fires, right? They were routinely exploited because of their ability to elevate their own privileges. So let's all be thankful that those two technologies are either gone or are definitely on the decline.
Agreed.
And I think, you know, Chrome is an interesting example, because of course everyone knows I have a kind of a love-hate relationship with Google, but I do like Google's, or at least Chrome's, automatic update. I mean, I have never been accosted by an upgrade prompt on Chrome. And that's truly the way it should be. It should just quietly fix itself and keep itself up to date. And I know Firefox has adapted that model. So, yeah. I mean, even iOS, to some extent, you can set your apps to update automatically when you're on charging and on Wi-Fi. So, I mean, as automated as it should be, it should never have to intrude or impede on users' time.
Agreed. Add that to the list of demands. Boy, we're kind of racking them up today, aren't we?
All right, so it's getting a little long here, so why don't we close?
As we can say goodbye, just want to say hello to Richard, our newest fan. Thanks for listening to HGH, Hey Girl Hey, the podcast. Join us next week for another exciting adventure. In the meantime, talk back to us on Twitter at HeyGirlHeyFM or by email at HeyGirlHeyFM@gmail.com. We'll see you next week.